Well, this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and I guess New Zealanders awoke this morning to a cultural calamity in France and Paris with the fire, the huge fire in Notre Dame Cathedral, and I've been watching that on BBC News. It does look as though there will be some good news from the fire in that the structure of the cathedral has been saved and some of the very valuable antiquities and artwork. So, another of those big world events that seems to be hitting the world. Anyway, this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and it's brought to you and funded by Framework Trust. So I have a few questions today about a new mental health organisation called the Mind Tribe, and we're going to talk about what is the Mind Tribe, what is it trying to achieve, and what goals and values does it have. That's our focus on Mental Health Radio today, a new and fledgling group called the Mind Tribe. So here's one of its co-directors, Danny Kittner, to tell us about this new initiative. But first, we'll ask Danny to tell his own story from his years growing up in Seattle, Washington. So, Danny, welcome to Take It From Us. Your first radio interview?
It is, yeah. Well, it's my first, definitely my first live radio interview. I did a very short one a few weeks back, but this is definitely a new experience, and excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's great. And we are excited to have you. So how were your early years growing up in Seattle and Washington?
It was a bit mixed. I mean, you know, overall, from the outside, I grew up in a middle-class family, and, you know, both parents were very loving, and I had everything I needed in terms of, you know, a warm house and family around me and a school to go to. So there were a lot of kind of what seemed to be the fundamental ingredients of a good, healthy childhood. Definitely from the inside, there was a lot of discomfort from a really early age. I don't know if I can pinpoint when that started, but It was noticeable, and it is hard to kind of put a finger on why that is or where that came from, but a lot of it was just feeling out of place or not feeling like I really belonged where I was.
What with your peers, do you think? You felt a lack of belonging with your colleagues and peers and people you were at school with?
I mean, I'm talking pretty young, so I think it started with definitely feeling out of place at school and with friends, and then also, maybe not having or not being in the place to accept for whatever reason, the love that was coming from family and parents and family, friends, and people around me. So, it was started to become more noticeable and more noticeable as I grew older.
Love from our parents normally is a great foundation for loving ourselves and being reasonably can we say stable? It sounds almost quite privileged in terms of the love that you describe from your parents and the fact that it was a middle class upbringing.
It was there, and I don't know if necessarily my parents were I mean, they end up getting divorced, so they weren't in the best relationships, you know, with each other.
Did you detect that as a young man?
Yeah, definitely. Right. So there was definitely an uncomfortableness in the family unit. It didn't feel like a unit. You know, while my parents were, you know, loving, and there wasn't any physical violence or anything like that towards me, there was definitely that feeling of this isn't a family unit. You know, that relationship, source relationship, I guess, between the parents wasn't, you know, didn't seem right in a sense. And so there was definitely, that was visible as a kid, yeah.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, one older sister.
Right.
So, we experienced that together, yeah. Yeah.
When do you think that you detected that things may not have been too cozy between mum and dad?
That's a good question. Is probably around 5, 6, 7, somewhere around there. You know, there was definitely disagreements going on regularly. So it didn't seem like it was kind of a relationship that was thriving anyway.
Right.
And in terms of like the messages that, you know, I was getting as a child, they were definitely coming from mom, you know, and dad separately, as opposed to kind of together.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you might have got a few mixed messages.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly.
So what was the outcome from that background?
Well, I mean, as that discomfort, I guess, that I felt at a young age, you know, obviously I started to look for ways to fix that or to make myself feel maybe more, more whole or like I belonged, trying to search for something that would make me feel better.
Where did that search take you?
Yeah, well, I mean, it, as early as I can remember, you know, it started, funnily enough, with sugar, probably, and then moved into, stealing a few things, doing that kind of thrill-seeking. Then as early as around 9, 10, 11, you know, sneaking down and tasting the alcohol in the basement fridge, and kind of wondering, being very delighted at kind of what that gave me. And so that kind of gradually became more regular.
To the extent that it was a problem, or?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was quite a lot of experimentation, you know, from 10, 11 was pretty light, but definitely 12, 13 started pretty regularly drinking and smoking weed, experimenting with other things like mushrooms or acid or really anything I could get my hands on. It was kind of like there's all these tools out here that make me feel a different way, and I just want to use as many of them as I can as often as possible. Yeah.
So did those tools or drugs or stimulants, did they address the discomfort?
I mean, in a certain way they did. They definitely made me feel better or made me numb to the feelings, you know, altogether, and allowed me, to also find other people. I mean, I guess it's kind of like finding a purpose. Like you just have this goal every day now to either meet people or find, you know, ways to get more drugs or alcohol or anything that will kind of, bring that feeling of you know, getting out of myself or out of my head or out of the discomfort.
So these other people you recognized were experiencing the same feelings as you, and how did you get to discuss the fact that you were experimenting with drugs and maybe these people were, and you could get together?
I mean, I think you're naturally, I mean, I was naturally kind of drawn to certain people. I mean, at the age of, you know, 13, 14, you do start to kind of notice people that might, you know, be a little bit more on the outside, I guess, in school and that, or around the city. So, I grew up, Seattle's a big city, and I grew up pretty centrally, so you do start to recognize that kind of recklessness and the people that are, you know, doing those things, using drugs and alcohol regularly. I was just drawn to them.
Did your parents get any hint of your recklessness?
A little bit. I mean, to be honest, at the time, my sister was going through difficulties as well, and so there was some of the kind of attention was focused on her.
Right.
I was quite good at people-pleasing, so I came across as very mellow. And
it might have been a reason, reason why you were mellow.
I was going to say compliant.
No, it was, I was pretty compliant and I came across that way. So it kind of gave me the ability to keep some of my kind of goings on the down low.
Right. These goings on, do they impact your emotional health or your mental health at all?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely stunts it to a huge extent in terms of the emotional health. Because there was no kind of acknowledgement of any emotion other traumatic things that, you know, happened along the way, whether it was with parents or other experiences, they were just not looked at, you know, from myself.
I mean, at school, did you feel a bit like an outsider? You were bullied, maybe, or...?
Yeah, I mean, funnily enough, I wasn't... I mean, yeah, there might have been some light bullying, but I was also kind of the goofy one, I guess. And then, you know, the one that had access to drugs and alcohol or knew about those things or...
So that made you popular, I
suppose. In a sense, I mean, it made me kind of on the side in a way that... other kids might just not want to go there. They might, you know, feel uncomfortable with that or, they know or they get told that drugs and alcohol are bad, so they kind of stay away. But then there were, you know, especially on 14, 15, other kids that were more interested in, you know, kind of wanting to ask my... for my help, you know, trying to get drugs or alcohol.
So that was the impact of that you felt a bit important? You know, you were almost an advisor on these things?
Yeah. Oh, it was thrilling, yeah, because I was... that was definitely worked up in my ego of trying to do this more regularly so that I could have access to this all the time. And, you know, other kids seemed to think I was cool or treat me more grown up.
Yeah.
And then you're in touch or you kind of are in contact with older kids as well at that age who are more regularly, you know, involved in drugs and alcohol, dealing it and that. And so when you kind of come into contact with them at that age, you definitely feel it's exciting, to kind of step into that world a little bit.
I mean, that was going to be my next question. Did you ever deal drugs and alcohol so that you made some coin on the way through?
Not regularly, no. It wasn't, I would not have been good at that. I mean, I was too selfish. I mean, at school I would definitely help people out every once in a while, but it wasn't to make money. It was, you know, I'd be with them. Yeah. At the time, you know, right. Doing the drugs or alcohol.
Accessing it, though, did you have suppliers or...?
Yeah. You meet dealers and you meet other people who's... I mean, my sister, you know, had a few contacts as well. And so I think I went through her once or twice to get some contacts and then other friends, older siblings as well. And was usually how we...
So you had to fess up to your sister that... I mean, is that a bit tricky that you could fess up and she could shop you with your parents? Or
yeah.
Did you know that she was
I knew that she was also, getting involved in that area. And she had... you know, gone to treatment at one point as well. So I was aware that that was kind of something she was going through. Mm. I think mostly we kind of, just in order to kind of survive, it felt like we kind of were doing our own thing. But we were slightly kind of aware yeah. that we were both struggling in our own way or doing our own.
Did you ever talk to her about the struggling, you know?
Yeah.
Shared thoughts about.
Not really. I mean, we would definitely talk about, like, our annoyance with our parents.
Right.
You know, because there was a lot of that back and forth once they divorced, especially, you know, we would be. And I would be living, you know, back and forth between my dad's and my mom's.
So the divorce happened in your teenage years.
When I was 8 or 9, they got separated. Yeah.
Right.
So from that age, I was going back and forth regularly.
Right. So that was a traumatic experience, was it? Or
yeah, yeah. I mean, it was difficult. It definitely was turbulent in terms of. You know, because my relationship with each parent was different, and there was always that kind of the other parent speaking, trying to speak through me to the other parent. And,
I mean, my kids' reaction, I had 3 children, 12, 10 and 8, I think, when I left my marriage, and they sort of said, oh, well, it's happening to lots of parents there. They didn't seem to be too fazed by it. But I don't know that I've ever really seriously talked to them about the impact on them.
I mean, I think my parents did try to have that line of conversation with us and with me. But, when you're – I mean, when I'm kind of – was surrounded by the escape that drugs and alcohol gave me, it didn't really give me a chance to be part of any conversation with my parents.
Right.
It just wasn't there.
Even if they'd wanted to, wouldn't have chosen to persist with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, let's take a music break and we'll come back and talk to Danny Kittner a bit more about where this drug use ended him up, I suppose. What have we got today, Declan?
Well, I actually came up with this one out of the middle of nowhere. I wanted to get something a bit more interesting. Well, go some of the unusual songs you don't sort of find. This one goes back to 1974. Do you ever remember a song called The Streak?
No.
Oh, you might know it if you hear it. It's a little like a comedy thing, so you've got the audience having a bit of a cackle in the background. But anyway.
It's called The Streak?
It's called The Streak, and it's by...
It was a spectacular streak at the rugby in Hamilton on Saturday night between the Blues and the Chiefs.
Well, I suppose you've got to throw some light entertainment in somewhere.
Yeah, well.
But, this is by a guy by the name of Ray Stevens. And, of course, you're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here on 104.6 Planet FM every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30. And here is Ray Stevens with The Streak.
Hello, everyone. This is your Action News reporter with all the news that is news across the nation on the scene at the supermarket. There seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. I was standing over by the tomatoes, and here he come, running through the pole beans, through the fruits and vegetables, naked as a jaybird. And I hollered over to Ethel. I said, "Don't look, Ethel!" And it's too late. She'd already been in the sense.
He comes.
Boogie-dah, boogie-dah.
They go.
Boogie-dah, boogie-dah.
And he ain't wearing no clothes.
Oh, yes, they call him The Streak.
Boogie-dah, boogie-dah.
Fastest thing on 2 feet.
Boogie-dah, boogie-dah.
He's just as proud as he can be. His anatomy, he gonna give us a peek. Oh, yes, they call him The Streak. He likes to show off his physique.
Look at that.
If there's an audience to be found, he'll be streaking it round, inviting public critique.
This is your Action News reporter once again, and we're here at the gas station. Pardon me, sir, did you see what happened?
Yeah, I was just in here getting my tires checked, and he just appeared out of the track. Just come streaking around the grease right there. Didn't have nothing on but a smile. I looked in there and Ethel was getting her cold drink. I hollered, "Don't look, Ethel!" And it's too late. She'd already been mooned. Flashed her right there in front of the shop or something.
He ain't rude.
Boogity, boogity.
He ain't rude.
boogity, boogity.
He's just in the mood to run in the new.
Oh, yes, they call him the street.
Boogity, boogity.
He likes to turn the other cheek.
Boogity, boogity.
He's always making the news. Wearing just his tennis shoes. Guess you could call him unique. Your Action News reporter in the booth at the gym covering the disturbance at the basketball playoff. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, deep. Hey, Tom, I was just going down there to get Ethel a snow cone. Here he come, right out of the cheap seats. Dribbling. Right down the middle of the court. Didn't have on nothing but his PS. Made a hook shot and got out through the concession stand. I hollered up at Ethel. I said, don't look, Ethel! It was too late. She'd already got a free shot. Grandstand. Right there from the home page.
Well, yes, they call him the street.
Here he comes again. Who's that with it?
Ethel. Is that you, Ethel?
He's just as proud as he can be.
What do you think you're doing?
Listen to me. He gonna give us
you
a key.
You get your clothes on.
Well, yes, they call him the street.
Ethel, where you go? Ethel, you shameless hussy!
If there's an audience to be found, you'll be streaking it round, inviting public to tea.
Say it isn't so, Ethel! Ethel!
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
With technician Declan Curran, and we're talking today to the co-director of the Mine Tribe, Danny Kittner, and you know, deliberately sort of talking about his background, which of course leads on to his involvement with the Mine Tribe and founding the Mine Tribe. But just wanted to, I mean, did you describe your drug use as an addiction, Danny?
You mean back when I was?
Yeah.
Well, I think there was a point where I knew that I couldn't stop even if I wanted to. And that, I guess, I mean, to be honest, my mother had some kind of experience in Al-Anon. And her father was an alcoholic, and so she, you know, I think had talked to us a bit, especially when she could tell we were using and abusing drugs and alcohol. She would talk to me about the idea of addiction and alcoholism, and so I mean, I was aware of that, and then there was a point where I realized that it was pretty challenging to stop for more than, you know, a few hours or a day or, yeah.
I mean, what happened to your schooling and...
I was kicked out. I mean, there was a point where obviously I was using every day and skipping a lot, and my grades were horrible because I just was not going. And so I was eventually... I wasn't expelled, but they said, you can, as long as you go to treatment, you know, we'll let you kind of resign or step away peacefully.
Right.
I was sent off to a wilderness treatment. So it was out in the 8 weeks out in the wild with, you know, just a little bit of food and some guides and a tarp to set up tent each night.
Yeah, and you were moving around in the forest.
In Utah. So it was that was a pretty special experience.
Was it specially designed for young people?
Yeah, who had issues such as addiction. I think they were broader kind of, I guess, behavioral problems, if you want to call them that.
Those behavioral problems... I mean, you were saying that you certainly had some behavioral problems, I guess, due to the addiction. Was there any threat to your mental health at this time in your life?
It is kind of in terms of mental health, yes, I was. There were no kind of diagnoses of mental health issues, in a sense. I had been to a few different psychologists a few times who, you know, definitely said that you know, my emotional kind of well-being was pretty far off where it needed to be. And but there were no kind of labels at that point other than the talk around, you know, addiction and yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you when you went to Utah for this sort of 8 weeks of, being taken out of society and toughened up and sorted out and that sort of thing, I guess there was a cost associated with that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was, it was hugely expensive, I'm sure, to my parents. And it was also, it was actually quite a good experience from my memory. Like, it wasn't... It served a lot of purposes in terms of me kind of realizing the strength of that I had to kind of endure, or a resilience, you know.
All those things we need for good mental health.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously I was away from the drugs and alcohol and with other guys who were in this similar situation. So there was a lot of relating going on in that sense.
And there was no access. Nobody tried to smuggle drugs or alcohol in or anything like that.
No. It was very clean, and and it was tough mentally and physically. But overall, it was a great experience. It didn't do anything for the addiction. It didn't cure it or anything like that.
No, but was this the turning point in your life?
No. Well, it was one, but after that I continued on. I went to a boarding school, the drug use got even worse there because there was a lot of guys who were into that. Mm. And so it kind of progressed and progressed until I came back home to Seattle for a summer and just kind of, just went all out. I was mostly into crack cocaine and some other kind of synthetics, but mostly crack and alcohol towards the end was a mixture that I found a lot of enjoyment in, and ended up getting into a car crash that summer. I was driving under the influence, and that's kind of, I guess, what I see as my rock bottom, if you want to use that term, because that's where I stopped.
Right. It took a serious accident to sort of bring you around. And
Well, and ever since, I think, especially in boarding school, there was a lot of acknowledgement for myself that I couldn't stop, because we were being drug tested in the boarding school.
Yeah.
And because the people there knew that we were using, so they wanted to keep us accountable. I would know there was a drug test coming up, and I just couldn't stop. Like, I just wasn't able to, and I kind of realized that, and I was,
Weren't asked to resign from the boarding school as
no,
well.
No, no, I wasn't. They were, they had more of a liberal kind of approach to trying to work with students, I guess.
So let's move on then to the Mind Tribe. That's been one of your focuses since arriving in New Zealand. How long have you been in New Zealand?
Almost coming up on 7 years.
Right.
So I came after high school. I got clean. So after the car crash, I got clean. I was 16. I finished high school. And decided to come out here for a year just to do kind of a holiday around before starting university back in the States.
Fell in love with New Zealand.
But once I got here, I fell in love and decided to stay, yeah.
So when did the Mind Tribe sort of come to fruition?
It started with, at university, discussing with a friend about kind of our ideas on the mental health system and our experiences of getting support. One of the other co-founders, Niall, he kind of, we were regularly discussing how could we create something or what could we create that might kind of increase the accessibility, of support basically in general.
At any point though, like This is a mental health and addictions initiative, isn't it? The Mind Tribe. So is this a reflection of your own mental health at some point in life?
Yeah, to some extent. I think that's true for Niles as well. Like, we both just looked at our experience, and as service users, as kind of coming into contact with the mental health system, trying to get support, and then also my interest from studying psychology, and just looking at, you know, looking through the statistics and looking through how people access different types of support, and just seeing a really huge gap, in a lot of accessible resources.
Yeah, well, access to the mental health system is difficult in New Zealand, and I have a friend who revealed the other day that he's going to be discharged by the mental health system at a time when he's probably as bad as I've certainly known him to be. So that's somewhat ironic, but... So the name of the Mind Tribe, you dreamed that up in a little bit of a brainstorming session?
Yeah, that was just a wordplay session with Niall and another friend who is quite good with words, and she helped us out. We sat down and just played around. I mean, we thought about what we wanted, you know, the name to reflect.
Yeah.
We were a little bit worried about using the term mental health or mental,
because
there's quite a lot of stigma around it. And we wanted to kind of reflect that feeling, or that, I guess, ability to relate to others, and kind of the power that brings, and also community, because we knew it. We wanted to start in the community at a small level,
right?
And so I guess tribe, yeah, for us that reflected kind of your tribe, your ability to relate to, you know, people around you. And
well, we could talk about a mental health tribe, couldn't we? I mean, it's sort of a distinct community, and because of our mental health, sometimes we do get segregated.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's take another music break. What have you got, Declan? The first choice was a little bit unique.
Oh, yeah, I'm surprised you haven't heard that. Coming back to 74, I mean, if I've heard of it, you should. Well, I mean, because you're, you know...
I wasn't even born then.
I'll go on. Don't believe them, listeners. It's a big fib. This one here I've got, obviously, I like to put one in for the young ones. So I've got one here from Calvin Harris and Rihanna, and it's called This Is What You Came For, which is, right, that's why you listen to Take It From Us.
Well, we hope they do.
Every Tuesday on 104.6 Planet FM, right here from 12:30 to 1:30.
Baby, this is what you came for. Lightning strikes every time she moves, and everybody's watching her, but she's looking at you. Thank you.
what you came for. Lightning strikes every time she moves.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And we've got a bit of rogue music coming in there from technician Declan Curran. Well, I'm host Sheldon Brown of Take It From Us, and today we're talking to the co-director, Danny Kittner, of the Mind Tribe. And actually, your sister, who you've mentioned, who's somewhat older than you, Danny, she's involved with the Mind Tribe. She's the other co-director, is she?
Yeah, she's one of the other co-directors, and she's just moved over here recently from the US, and she's playing a big role, helping out a lot with the group, especially, which focuses on providing support for people getting off psychiatric drugs.
So that's been one of the sort of focus on focuses. That's not the right word. It should be foci, I think.
Yeah, but anyway, don't look at me for support.
No, I'm not looking for you to you for support, Declan. I thought Danny might be able to help me out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's one area we are wanting to provide that support, just because I guess one of the main things we're trying to do is provide a space for I guess different journeys or different experiences of journeys to wellness in terms of mental health. And, you know, we don't have an opinion on psychiatric drugs. We're not here to say they're good or bad. There's such a huge varied experience of psychiatric drugs, and there's so many different types of psychiatric drugs. But one thing that we definitely know for sure from talking to the community and from just you know, watching the news, looking at stats, is that there isn't that representation or that support for people who are, you know, looking to, considering, or in the process of getting off psychiatric drugs.
I mean, the harsh reality really is that the psychiatric system is really, in many ways, only offers medication. I mean, that's a bit of an extreme view, but the great respect is that they only offer medication. There is very little in terms of things like creativity or encouraging exercise or I don't know, programs, even accessing counselling over and above, say, six sessions, which if you're seriously mentally stressed or mentally challenged, six sessions is probably only just the tip of the iceberg. So it's the medication that seems to be... do you think that that's a sustainable approach to addressing mental wellness?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there needs to be that that representation of the whole kind of wholeness that's needed for a journey to wellness. And in terms of psychiatric drugs, I guess kind of what we, you know, are wanting to do is help people or provide people with resources which allows them not to reach that crisis point. And so I think people, you know, who are on psychiatric drugs, a lot of them are at risk of kind of reaching that crisis point over and over and quickly, and it's kind of, it can be a really turbulent time.
Sorry to interrupt, but what you describe as a crisis point, are you relating it to the use of psychiatric medication, that they get to a crisis point where the side effects are worse than the original diagnosis?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is different for each person in terms of what crisis looks like, but definitely there have been a lot of people who experience really bad side effects, and also not necessarily any relief from what seems to be the symptoms of whatever that psychiatric drug is supposed to be treating.
The reality is that many with psychiatric illness live 25 years less than the average population. And surely the medication must be a factor in that shorter lifespan.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is currently, I mean, from what we've, I guess, seen, a lot of these people kind of only have the medication as their treatment. Like you said, it's kind of the only thing being used. And there is, and I mean, that's what we're trying to do, not just with people coming off psychiatric drugs, but with everyone experiencing any type of mental distress, is that acknowledgement of the other parts of exercise and talking to someone and eating well and sleeping well.
Right. So what is the Mind Tribe saying about the issue of getting off psychiatric drugs? Are you just offering resources to offer options, if you like? Or
yeah, I mean, we're just saying that there needs to be more support. And I mean, what at this time, we're very early, you know, with our organization in terms of what we can actually do. We don't have any funding at this point, where it's all volunteer led. So, you know, we're trying to be sustainable. And so, and that means we want to provide something sustainable. And so at this point, all we can really provide is that space for people to come in and share their experiences. So it's kind of, it's an open group led by a facilitator, my sister, who has lived experience of that journey.
Yeah.
And it's just a place for people to come and share their experiences of, and listen to other people if they're curious about that. And so that's kind of what we can provide at this stage. We're definitely interested in talking to other, you know, health professionals and other organizations about other ways to provide types of support. But
Well, there's been this fairly significant issue with antidepressants where a generic has been introduced as a replacement for Effexor and Arrow, I think, antidepressant. And there's been quite an outpouring of concern about this generic Enlifax. Have you been involved in any of that at all in terms of, you know, this theme of getting off psychiatric drugs?
Not really. I mean, we're really trying to focus on, I guess, you know, we want to be as inclusive as possible, and we don't have, I guess, the resources or the time really to kind of get into that in that detail. But yeah, we're really just trying to provide that support in that space. I mean, personally, I love, you know, I try to keep up to date with what's going on and and in terms of the psychiatric drugs as well.
We interviewed Denise Calto, who runs that Facebook page for Fiora. It's an amazing Facebook page, and I complimented her on Facebook just yesterday, where she does so much research in terms of finding interesting articles, interesting information, events that are happening in mental health. I think she came along to the first meeting that the Mind Tribe staged in Carlton Gore Road.
She
did tell me that, in fact, I think we interviewed her the week before that meeting was, so we talked to Denise about that. Yeah, so, I mean, that's a huge platform for interesting, valuable information. And, you know, congratulations to Denise if she's listening for the effort and time that she puts into that. And, of course, that's all voluntary as well. You know, trying to set up a volunteer mental health organisation like the Mind Tribe while you're trying to probably put food on the table and live and meet the expenses of New Zealand. What's it like?
Oh, it's, I mean, it's tough in some ways. I mean, I wish I could spend more time on the Mind Tribe. I wish it could be a full-time job and, you know, that's something I'd love to work towards. I could see it, yeah, I mean, it would flourish probably faster if I could put more time into it. But at this point, you know, it is just evenings and some lunch breaks and weekends, and it is tough. But to be honest, while I'm working on it, I just, there's endless energy in it, and it is definitely feels like a purpose for me. So it's not hard to put an extra time to
do that. I think those support groups too, we're all gone through similar experiences and can get together from a supportive and a social element, are really, really crucial. We had one we set up on the shore for bipolar, which sort of didn't go where I wanted it to go, unfortunately, but there's a lot of value in them, definitely.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, for us, what we're struggling with right now is getting it out there, that it's there. I mean, it hasn't had really any attendance, to be honest, at this point, in terms of the getting off psychiatric drugs one.
Right.
We're starting another one next Monday, which will be happening every Monday, which is just more around maintaining mental health and wellness.
Right.
And so our big goal is really working out how to promote those groups.
Yeah. So you're most welcome to mention where that mental health, well-being and wellness class is going to happen. What's the venue?
So the current one, this getting off psychiatric drugs, is happening in Avondale at the Avondale Community Center every Wednesday from 7 to 8. And then the one starting next Monday, which will continue every Monday, is happening at the Western Springs Community Hall, and is happening every Monday from 7 to 8.
7 to 8.
Yeah.
So that's on Great North Road,
yeah.
I think it's 900
something,
isn't it just opposite?
999 or 960.
It's just opposite the road, I think, by Western Springs, isn't it?
It's just opposite the park, and it's, off Great North Road, right after St. Luke's Road, and there's lots of parking. And
well, many people in mental health are aware of the Western Springs Centre, because that's where a whole lot of mental health meetings and events have been held. Well, let's take another music break, Declan.
I'll try not to stuff it up this time. I got distracted talking with you. That's just one of the things you got to watch. And going back into the 80s now, Cyndi Lauper, she's a bit of a character, isn't she, with her multicoloured hair, provides a little bit of distraction and alternative. This song here is called Time After Time, and of course you're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio. We broadcast here every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM. And here is Cyndi Lauper with Time After Time.
Time after time, if you're lost, you can look and you
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Jordan Brown with technician Declan Caron, and we're talking today to Danny Kitner, who is the co-director of the Mine Tribe. Is there a certain area of Auckland that you're focusing on, Danny?
Yeah, so we are currently focusing on central Auckland just because it's easy for us just as volunteers to be able to kind of, number one, get around and make sure that the support is there for kind of the groups we set up. You know, we're also looking at existing groups or activities or events that have a focus on mental health. And we're working on promoting those. So there's some, like a running group that happens every Wednesday from Victoria Park where, you know, you get some exercise and then they actually talk about a topic around mental health afterwards.
In the park.
Yeah, in the park in a circle. Oh, and yeah. And it's really awesome. And that's exactly the kind of initiative we're trying to both start up depending on the need, but also if there's anything that's going on, we want to know about it and try to promote it.
And you've got a cycle group, I think, coming up.
Yeah, well, there was actually last Saturday, there was, it's Nutter's Ride Together, and it's put on from by another person with lived experience, and she has, you know, set it up to do a cycle group every month in a different part of Auckland. And there's that kind of ability to, yeah, talk about mental health as well.
So how can people access, you know, these things? Have you got your own website?
Yeah. So we do have our website, which is themindtribe.org. We're doing a weekly email, which people, you know, can sign up to on our website. And that gives them, first of all, what's happening over the next week in terms of groups, activities, and events. And it also gives them kind of a little thought or something to relate to, maybe, that, you know, the email itself is kind of a time that they can kind of relate or reflect on their mental health going forward.
Yeah, well, that's obviously where I've read about the cycle group and the running group. And as winter comes along, it might be a bit cool to sit around in the circle at Victoria Park
totally.
And think about your mental health.
I've just had an idea pop into my head, which frequently happens, and that is the meetup. Have you heard of that?
Meetup. Yeah, so we are...
Have you got a group set up on there?
So our groups are also being promoted on Meetup.
Awesome.
Because there is a wide reach there.
Yeah.
And in terms of the winter thing, I mean, we're also looking at other arts and crafts type. You know, we really want to get the whole kind of experience of creating as well. We think it's really valuable for mental health, so...
Are you looking at like an age group that you're predominantly aiming at? Like, is this something you'd like to take through to schools and that sort of thing, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, it is hard to put an age group on it because we're really trying to fill that area of prevention in terms of preventing people from getting to crisis and supporting people maybe after they've been to a point of crisis. But yeah, I mean, I guess we are kind of looking at 20s, 30s, 40s if you want to put an age on it. People who might be in university or in their first job or might have some life event that triggers something and then,
The sort of support, though, that the Mine Tribe is providing is through community, isn't it? Because you're not counsellors or psychologists or anything like that. You're sort of... The tribe is the support.
Yeah, so it is very peer-to-peer. In that sense, you know, the people, I mean, we do want to have volunteers who have some knowledge of supporting people, so we will look at doing some type of training, but yeah, not professional at this point, and it is optioned later on in trying to provide those services, but at this point it's completely peer-to-peer.
I think it's getting it off the ground and getting that confidence too, and everyone's relaxed and so on.
I mean, you've worked in, I think, the Mason Clinic. What were you doing there?
I was an intern there for about a year and a half and working with people with intellectual disabilities, actually. I was a co-facilitator of alcohol and drug treatment program for people in one of the units there.
Yeah.
And so leading a group and designing the program itself was really interesting.
Yeah, so and you have a goal maybe to work in mental health or in social services?
Yeah, well, I love working in, I mean, I want to kind of break in terms of looking at different support worker roles or looking at some youth worker roles. I mean, in terms of, yeah, I would love to be, you know, heading the Mind Tribe. That would definitely be a dream in terms of a job.
Heading the Mind Tribe, but yeah, you've got to get some funding.
Yeah, exactly.
So that you get a salary and the thing really takes off.
Yeah, yeah. So in the meantime, definitely thinking about maybe studying a bit more post-grad and yeah, just getting some work.
So you've done a psychology degree?
Undergraduate, yeah. Undergraduate. Yeah, at University of Auckland.
Right, right. Yeah, well, what have we got, Declan? We're pretty much out of time, are we?
Yeah, we are.
It sounds like we've got Jay Cocker in the background there. Well, thank you very much, Danny, for coming
to
talk about the Mind Tribe.
Awesome. We'll see you guys all next week. Behave. Or if you can't behave, be good at it. Yeah,
have
indeed.
A good Easter.
Everybody that you run into.